Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. Welcome to this week's episode of Mum and Mama, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy. For all your accountancy needs, wearegolding.com. Little tip for you, you can do your tax return now. You don't have to wait until the 31st of January to contact an accountant and say, please file my tax return. You can actually do it from now. So if I were you, I'd go to wearegolding.com and ask them to help you. I do like those guys. I know I keep going on about it, but they are very nice. How are you? Have you had a good half term? I've had a nice half term. I don't feel like I've stopped. I always never make any plans because I think we'll just relax and then we end up doing everything. But it's been very nice. I'm not complaining. This week's episode, I was joined by the lovely Andy Chambers, who's a wonderful, wonderful guy. He has set up a company called Born Human. And he's going to tell us all about it. But basically, his wife suffered postnatal depression after the birth of their son. And he experienced depression as well. And I had a really hard time of it. As you can well imagine, it's an absolutely awful thing. It's very sad. And his experience of that made him want to create something to help people in the same situation or prevent them from getting into that situation in the first place. So it's really good and it's a really lovely idea and I really enjoyed chatting with him and I hope you do too. I'm going to post all the links if you want to get in touch and enjoy. See you on the other side.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Work. Today I'm joined by the very lovely Andy from Born Human. Hi Andy.
Hi Amy.
We know each other from way back, so we're not really strangers, are we?
No, not
but
really.
I did only just find out that you moved to Bath like 8 years ago and I didn't have a clue about that.
Shows how much you've been to visit me, Amy, I suppose. That's
I've never been to Bath.
But you should come. Everyone loves it down here.
I've always wanted to go. I do want to go.
It is lovely. Like, it's a really nice place to just... Everyone, when I first moved down from London, I felt like there was some sort of conspiracy because everybody that I met saw it, like leaving drinks and those kind of things, said the same thing to me. It was like word for word. Oh, you're moving to Bath. That's so lovely down there. I wish I could live there. And it's like, well, why don't you then? And why do you keep saying it to me? Like, should I not be moving? Like, is there something in this?
It's only like a couple of hours out of London, isn't it?
Hour and a half on the train, yeah. It's quite a nice little journey on the train. Yeah, yeah, it's good.
Do you come in? You don't work in London, though, do you?
No, I work from home now.
You don't commute,
I ditched London.
That's handy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm over London now. I moved when I first moved. Worked in Bristol for a bit, but yeah.
Okay.
So it was all...
I've never been to Bristol either.
Different vibe there. Totally different vibe.
Very well travelled.
Yeah.
That's when I used to do a dubstep night, and we used to get a lot of people from Bristol. One of my friends actually used to get on the £1 bus from Bristol to London.
The mega bus.
It used to take him all day, on the mega bus, just to come to the night.
Via Scotland, basically. That was the price he paid.
I was just thinking, how much does it cost just to get, like, a coach?
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a big commitment, isn't it, sitting on a bus all day? I mean, I know it's a quid and that's amazing, but...
I can't get my head around it. And we've had friends come and visit and they've got down here... for £1 in under like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. I can't understand how it works. I'll never get my head around it, but but they do. Sometimes they even put you on a train, I think. You pay for a mega bus and then it gets replaced by a train. So you end up on a train anyway and save yourself 100 quid
away. I've never heard of that. I've never ever heard of train replacement.
Bizarre, isn't it? But yeah, it happens. Yeah, learn something new every day, eh?
You do learn something new every day. So... I've got you on today to talk about your new venture, which is Born Human. So why don't you start off explaining about what that is and then how you got there?
Yeah, okay. So Born Human is a mental health consultancy for parents, basically, in the workplace. And I decided to set it up on the back of my own experience and, my lived experience of basically... my journey as a parent and also the support that I've given to others along the way and the kind of things that I've been involved with, really, and kind of what we identified or what we believe. So it was done between myself and my co-founder, James Costello, who is an author and written books. He's a senior lecturer and counsellor and psychotherapist. Excuse my doorbell if you can hear that.
That's all right. Mine always goes that way.
It's another Amazon delivery, I imagine. So we basically, he'd written a book unbeknownst to me at the time. He was my counselling supervisor for some other charity work that I was doing. And we were talking about kind of, his book subject is called Workplace Wellbeing, a Relational Approach. And the idea is to kind of, the concept in the book is to try and change the way we look at our relationship with work and our behaviour patterns and the way we treat people, how it's kind of, I suppose, how work integrates with our lives, really. And just by chance, I'd kind of come to him on the basis that I'd been doing some charity work, looking at supporting dads. And I said, I think part of the problem is that this is all being done too late and we need to kind of get ahead of it. So two heads collided and we had a long conversation, or a few long conversations, I suppose. And then... So Born Human is designed really to kind of get upstream a little bit, because one of the things that I found, and I think through the support work that I've done, is that a lot of people kind of, when they're having problems, mental health problems generally, especially as parents, it always comes too late. You're asking for help when you've already got the problem. Whereas actually, from my own experience, what I realized was that actually if I was better prepared and I had more to offer, more to learn in the early days, then I'd be better placed to kind of handle that, you know. What use is it if I don't know where to go or what to look for? Then I'm not kind of geared up to kind of solve the problem. So so that's sort of where it comes from. And I guess the benefit of it, really, or the way we see it, is that it's twofold. One, it obviously benefits the people that are involved in it, but it also benefits the businesses that they're working with, because they're investing in their well-being, you know, absence and presenteeism and all sorts of problems that come with mental health at work are so prevalent, and it makes people completely unproductive. I guess we've all sat there well, before I had kids and since I've had kids, where I've sat at work and not really been, I've been in the room, but have I really been in the room? And that's such a huge percentage of people's day, you know? And so, yeah, I think as from a business perspective, they want people to be as productive as possible, right? And they want people to kind of be engaged in what they're doing, to enjoy their work, because then people are more productive, they're loyal, all those kind of factors. And really what it takes is kind of open conversation, which is everything I've learned in the last 10 years on this earth, really, I suppose, is that that can change a lot. So, so that's kind of, in a nutshell, kind of where we've come to with it. And we're only sort of 7 or 8 weeks old at the moment, so it's all very new and very fresh. But
really? But you've been doing stuff for a while, though, right?
Yeah, so my potted history, I'll get it quickly, so it'll take a long time otherwise. But I was...
That's, we got all day.
Oh, good, okay. The listeners might have, I don't imagine, but anyway.
Five parts.
So I used to be... I was a currency options trader in London, and I did that for about 12 years, and...
Is that when you all shout at each other? I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. I wasn't doing the actual trading. I mean, I use that so that people can kind of reconcile what it is. But if I went into the details, you'd all fall asleep. But it was in that world as such anyway. And it was busy. It was hectic. It was, it was high pressure, all those kind of things. And parts of it I enjoyed. But I always kind of, when 2008 came along, I was like, I don't really want to do this anymore, but I don't know what else to do. So I sat on my desk, kind of in true form, as we just said, about sitting there often for about 4 years, kind of staring at my screen, being like, when's this day going to be over? You know, doing the basics of my job, but not really kind of pushing myself with anything too far. It was just trying to think of a way out, really. And and then I guess, as it always is, that a good woman can change everything, and so she did. So when I met my wife, I kind of moved to Bath and just decided I wanted a fresh start. So I moved down here with a bit behind me, so I knew that I had a bit of time, and I did a bit of consultancy work. But in the meantime, I went to see my wife's cabinet maker. She's an interior designer, and we'd gone to visit him about a sample. And I'd always got on with him. He was a nice guy. I'd met him a few times before. And he said to me, oh, what are you going to do when you finish? And I said, oh, I don't know, Clive, maybe I'll come work with you. And he said, well, you can if you want. I've got a big kitchen to do in the Cotswolds starting next week. So I said, all right. So I did. So 2 weeks later, I think, I was starting there learning how to make furniture. Which was awesome. Like, it was just such a... It was totally left field. I had no idea where it was coming from. And to be honest, I didn't really know what the next step kind of looked like, you know. But it was just amazing to be doing something that I enjoyed. And the last time I'd done woodwork, I was like 14 at school.
Did you find that you had a knack for it? Was it hard? Because I could just imagine people that do things like that, you've got to kind of have a bit of a... Because I imagine it's really quite hard.
It's quite... The interesting thing with it is that I suppose I did, which is nice. I did kind of take to it quite well. And he says I'm pretty good at it, which is quite a nice thing. I'm not just blowing smoke up my own backside. So the interesting thing about it is the connection between my old life and my new life is that to be a cabinet maker, you have to be good with numbers and detailed person because it's all about accuracy. So interestingly, although I hadn't... And that's sort of started my brain ticking in some ways, because it made me think, actually, I've got more skills coming out of my old life than I realised I had. So there's lots of places you can apply it, but I didn't really know where. So, I worked with him for a few years and learnt loads from him. It was really nice to be learning in my older age, if that makes sense. I was kind of...
That's the one thing I always say, is I'd love to go to university now because I would appreciate it. I wouldn't just copy all my work from my mate who was doing the same modules, but we were doing it at
just to get
times.
It out of the way.
Yeah, like I'd really love to learn now because I would appreciate it. I think it's pointless at 18.
It's choice, isn't
Not
it,
pointless,
I suppose.
But, you know...
Well, at 18, you don't really know what you want. Not always. Some people do, but I certainly... I think a lot of people kind of sit there and you say, well, what are you going to do? And it's like this pressure of like, you've got to do something, like, well,
yeah,
take your pick kind of thing. And I think there's a bit of a lack of, I don't know, nurture, I suppose. And that, I guess that kind of proves it. Me doing that, what I've realised in the last sort of 8 years is that my brain is way more creative than I ever realised. But yet nobody at school or college or anywhere had that conversation.
Yeah.
Nobody ever said to me, have you ever thought about the fact that you might be a creative rather than, you know, just wanting to go into the city, because that's what everyone did who lived in Essex, because
yeah,
the money was there and that's where you ran to, kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, from that point of view, it was a bit of a revelation, but it was just great. You know, I would kind of be quite happy staying there till 7 o'clock at night and learning new things. And so I did that for a while. And initially, we fell pregnant with our little boy, Wilbur. He's now 5. And at that time, one of the things that my wife and quite a few of our friends are also interior designers always said they struggled with was kids' furniture. They said they never could never find good kids' furniture that's really well made, that's really nicely designed. And I was already making, I'd already taken the decision when we fell pregnant. I was like, well, I'm going to make all this furniture from scratch, like old school, not like, not with nuts and bolts, but it will be kind of joints and everything. And
yeah,
me getting right into kind of like Jesus type woodwork, you know? And so I did make all his furniture for him. It was, you know, I made his cots, kind of side tables and all that kind of stuff. And that was a real kind of privilege. But on the back of that, we were like, well, I'd like to sort of carry on with woodwork, but doing something that I enjoy. So I set up a brand called Kid and Bear, which is still going, but it doesn't look like this anymore. But it was initially intended to be designed for making kids' furniture for kind of interior designers, because most of us in the world don't have the money to burn on kids' furniture, because 2 years later it needs to go in the bin, or it's taking up too much room. So, but there are people out there who do spend money on it and are quite happy to, kind of thing. So that's where we were going to go with it. And anyway, we had Wilbur, I'd made his furniture, that was all done and dusted, and I decided when he was born that I'd take some time off, because I thought I'll never get that chance again. He's my firstborn. It was the only time in my life I will ever get to spend that amount of time with him, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that. So I took 9 months off, I think, so we kind of both were off. Lucy was off on maternity.
That's lovely.
And it was, I mean, it was really nice. It had its moments, as it always does, but I think it was almost like overkill in some ways, because two of you caring for one baby is like almost too much. It's like twiddling your thumb sometimes, but not
well,
that
in the early, they don't do anything, do they? But even just for the rest, like the company as well.
Yeah.
Because it's quite lonely. If it's just you and a baby, they can't talk.
No, that's
there's
right.
There's only so much daytime TV you can watch before you go
that's
insane.
Right. Jeremy Carl gets very boring after a while. it's true. And it was a real privilege. Like, I felt really lucky. I kind of felt like from leaving the city, it was like, well, I would never have had this opportunity. You know, I'd have had 2 weeks leave and that would have been it, you know. So to have that chance was pretty amazing.
And the hours as well, like commuting, like you're out the door first thing, aren't you? And you don't get back till, well, I imagine in that kind of job, it's very high pressure, isn't it? So you're probably not getting in till late.
We left early. I was, you know, in banking, I was always leaving early. I was kind of at work by sort of 7, and then I was coming home. I was quite lucky. We were never there that late. I never really left work much beyond 6, because it was just the nature of the job I did. But still, it's quite a long day. And actually, when you think of that in kids' terms, if I'm out the door by 6:30 to get to work for 7, and I don't get back until 6:30, well, that's bedtime to bedtime, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And there were so many of my colleagues, actually, like ex-colleagues that I've worked with, who, you know, didn't really have a relationship with their kids, you know. Not that they didn't have any relationship, but it wasn't a deep relationship, and certainly not the kind of relationship I would want with my kids. So it was a bit of a driving force. I got to that age, really, where, and I guess that was a motivator, really, was I was sitting there thinking, you know, I want to get out of this for various reasons, but one of those is that my family is really important to me. So if I'm going to meet someone and move on and, you know, settle down with kids and that, this probably isn't the space for me to be doing that. So yeah, so I was really lucky to have that time with him and with Lucy, and it was, yeah, it was amazing. But it, unfortunately, we realised about probably 6 months into him being born that Lucy had postnatal depression, and she suffered with that for about 3 years in the end.
Oh God!
Which, yeah, I mean, it kind of, it's a really.
Oh, thank God you were there.
Yeah, I'm grateful I was, and I think she's grateful I was. Not always, but it was like a, you know, you don't realise it's coming, right? Because you do like NCT and you do all the kind of preparations, reading books and all that kind of stuff before you have them. And then you get the whole baby blues thing. So that's almost like a red herring in some ways, because it's like, oh, it's just baby blues. And then it kind of carries on for a bit longer and you're like, well, maybe it's just sleep deprivation or whatever it is. And then there's this whole exploration of like, well, what could it be? And, you know, there's fears involved in it. There's kind of pride. There's so many different components. And it's like, well, do I want to admit this to anyone? Do I speak to a GP about it? And that's such a common, thing that like people, I think it is with parenthood in general. And that's part of the reason that Born Humans exist in, is that I want there to be open dialogue about these things. I want kind of to encourage conversations in places where they don't usually happen. And work is one of those things, you know. Nobody talks at work about how difficult their teenager's being at the moment. I mean, they might do, but it's kind of like, oh, it's tough at the moment, move on kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually underneath the surface, that can be really traumatizing, you know. Kids can be making your life really difficult, and not intentionally. Yeah. It's just the nature of being a parent. So after sort of 6 months, Lucy kind of got the idea that that's what was going on, and we'd been to see a GP, and that kind of mobilized for about another 6 months. We didn't really talk about it. So not us internally, we talked about it, but it didn't cross the door. It wasn't like there was a shame to it. There was a, no one can kind of know. She wasn't comfortable kind of sharing it with the world. And I get that, you know, like I'd feel the same, you know. But I mean, ultimately,
I'd be devastating, absolutely devastating.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what I know now, and you know, what we've learned, is that it's a health condition. It's an illness. It's not anything else. Yeah. But yet, because it happens in your head, and it's not a broken leg or a broken arm, to the outside world, they can't make sense of it. So when your behaviour's changing, it's complicated. So it was testing, and as far as for all of us, you know, it was really difficult. But we realized that at home, we found that we needed help, and health visitors kind of thankfully helped us sort of find the right help, which was good. She ended up doing drama therapy in the end, art therapy, which I think initially when it was suggested, it was like, no, like, I ain't doing that, like, it just sounds crazy. But it was, even after, I like vividly remember the first session when she came back, and you know, she was given all these props and given all these things to kind of use to describe a scene. So they might turn around to her and say, well, how did you feel before you were pregnant? And that would involve kind of like colored scarves and little kids characters and just loads of different things that kind of would create a picture, and you'd kind of put them all into a pool, and then you'd look at that picture and then say, well, how do you feel since baby's been born kind of thing? What do you feel like now? And then the colours would change, and then the faces would change, and the moods would change of it. And she came home kind of like telling me all about kind of how it was done, and like said, it really helped to kind of visualise what she was going through.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, she was going through it with other women as well. So that is another huge part of it. She's normalising the conversation. She's not the only person, and often that's how it feels. But one of the struggles that we had, I suppose I had really, was the fact that there was nowhere for dads, like, you know, or partners, let's say partners. I think that's a more reflective situation, to be supporting somebody through that kind of mental illness is really testing. So she after we'd kind of had a year or so, and she said, okay, I'm kind of okay with you talking to your mates about it now, or do what you need to do kind of thing, just don't tell me. I did, and I tried that, and it's really difficult. Like, you know, how do you, you know, I remember coming up, because I obviously moved down to Bath. I don't see, you know, old friends that often, so I distinctly remember going out in Camden one night with, I'd gone up to see some of the boys, and was still at the bar. It was like 11 o'clock. We'd probably had 5 or 6 pints already, and I was like, this is the time.
Yeah.
So I stood at the bar and sort of went, boys, I really need to talk to you about something. And they were like, okay, yeah, what's up? And then I kind of spewed it for like 10 or 15 minutes, and then I looked at all their faces, and they were like, whoa. Dude, I'm really sorry. That sounds really terrible. I don't know what to do with it, but you just killed the whole night. Like, not, they didn't say that, but you could feel it, you know? So I was like,
okay,
this isn't the place to do it. And I think what I learned from that was that you need the right space, and you need the right sympathy, empathy. Empathy is a better way of putting it, but you need someone to understand what you're going through. And unfortunately, until you've been through something similar, you can't really empathize with it, or you can try, but it's you don't know what it feels like. So anyway, so I had a conversation with at the time for Kid and Bear, I was doing a photo shoot for the furniture, and the guy was a friend of mine who was doing the photography. Really, really lovely guy. He was like super helpful. He was great at what he did. But he'd been gone off radar for like about 2 weeks trying to sort this thing out. And anyway, in the end, I'd sort of chased him a few times. And then in the end, he called me up and said, like, I've got a confession to make. I'm really sorry. I've been kind of AWOL because I've been trying to avoid having to tell you. But like, we're nearly at the date. I'm going to see you. And we're mutual friends anyway. I've got to tell you, I've had to move out. And I said, oh, what's caused that? Are you all right? And he said, well, my wife's got postnatal depression, and she's had postnatal depression for 5 years. And I said, oh, wow. So we spent an hour on the phone. I was sat in a car park at the workshop I was using at the time. Sun was shining, and I just sat in the car for like an hour. And it was the most, like, it was like a light bulb. It was just the weirdest thing to kind of be like, you know, his situation was way worse than mine. And as far as like, his marriage was kind of coming to an end in some respects.
Yeah.
and we were, at that point, I was probably about 18 months. Will was about 18 months old. So, but it felt weirdly supportive on both sides. I mean, he came off the conversation saying, that's the most useful hour of conversation I've had in 5 years. And for me, it was exactly the same. It was like, do you know what? I get it now. Like, and I'm also, what I realise is that I'm not the only one that's kind of trying to support someone through that. So it built.
How long does postnatal depression last?
There's no sort of defined time, really. I mean, it comes on. Well, the kind of postnatal element of it, I think, is defined as happening within a year of birth.
Okay.
But it's hormone, it's driven by hormones, as lots of these things are.
Yeah.
And it can last for as long as you make it last, almost, really, unless you know, finding help is the answer, really. Some people just navigate their way out of it independently.
Yeah.
Others get it much worse, you know. You can get a really different, there's different degrees of severity, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I think what's really damaging with it is the fact that obviously you're coming into this period of your life, and at the same time someone's saying to you, okay, there's a baby to look after as well, right? So you're sleep deprived, you don't have any capacity to kind of look after yourself, self-care's gone out the window, and somebody's kind of like, you're sort of saying, well, how do I scramble around to kind of get support for these kind of things? And where do I find the time to look after myself in it? The baby's surely got to come first. And that's the challenge with it, is that it is a bit of a double-edged sword.
And it must be so hard to recognise as well, because it's really hard when you have a baby and you do feel shitty and you do cry a lot for no reason. And, you know, there's loads of things. So for you to actually know whether it's just the fact you've just had a baby or there's something more going on.
Yeah.
And I suppose when you get used to stuff, you might just think, oh, well, this is just how it is now since I've had a kid.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
you've got no benchmark, have you?
This is just how it is. Yeah.
You've got no benchmark to go against. And you're sort of like thrown into this sort of deep situation where it's like, right, make sense of it all. And if you've got nothing to go against, then it's just like, as you say, it's just normal. It's just what you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's the most difficult part. And I think that's what creates the isolation, right? That's what creates this sort of solitude that people kind of, I don't feel comfortable talking about it because am I just whinging about the fact that I've had a kid effectively?
Yeah,
which, you know, lots of people can't have children. They have complications, all those kind of things. This should be utopian almost. And it just doesn't feel that way. But am I being really selfish by asking why I can't, you know, why I feel this way? And so, I mean, interestingly, postnatal depression affects 1 in 10 men. And yet you think,
wow.
Yeah. And it's not like a, you know, there's obviously no biological connection there that causes that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it kicks in for a lot of men. And you sort of think,
wow.
I mean, that is, and at the moment, where we stand with it is that men are kind of sidelined in the whole process. This isn't all about men. I think for me, we're born human. This is about families. And the whole point of it is that, you know, it's about family well-being, and if one of you's kind of broken, then it's going to make it more difficult for the others to kind of pick you up. So someone's got to take the slack. So it's about whole family health almost, and well-being. But so I realized through that like I didn't really have any support when Lucy was going through it. But I realized that I did need to talk, and I did kind of have that desire to kind of share it. And that conversation with the photographer really kind of opened my mind to the relief that kind of gave me.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah. So when Lucy was getting her help, there was nothing offered for you?
No. It was There's no...
See, I find that interesting, because you'd think, because obviously you're both the parents, and it is obviously going to affect...
Yeah.
The other person.
Well, in any sort of caring arrangement, right? Like carers, you are a carer essentially for somebody, and you're trying to do that at the same time as raise a child, and potentially, fortunately not for me, but for most people, they're also trying to hold down a job, and they're trying to bring income in, and like they're not there all the time. It's so complicated, and we are moving in the right direction. You know, we've done a lot of work in the last sort of 5 or 10 years in terms of trying to change the way health professionals kind of address men in the equation or address partners. I mean, I, by way of example, and this has never left me, but I remember going to a midwife appointment about 30 weeks in to Wilbur. And I remember sitting down, the midwife was in her chair at her desk. I was sat next to her, and then Lucy was kind of the other side of me. And I'd asked a question. I'd said, I can't even remember what the question was now, but I asked her something around kind of like, what does that mean if, you know, where do we stand if the baby's breech or whatever the conversation was. Yeah. And she actively leant round me and answered my wife. And I went, I just sort of sat there and went, oh. And then she must have either misheard, or I'm sure our voices don't sound similar, but move on, you know, this will be all right. So I just thought I'd give her the benefit of the doubt. And then about 5 minutes later, I did ask another question, and she did exactly the same thing. And I was like, geez, like, what is this? Like, I am a human being. Like, I get that I'm not carrying a baby, but like, we are a family, right? I'm invested in this process. I want to be a dad.
And it's great that you are. It's great that you are asking questions, and you're not just sitting there thinking, oh,
God, when can I get back to work? Or when can I get out of here kind of thing? Yeah. Yeah. And it's, so it was bizarre, but it's, I mean, there's been a lot of work done that's sort of trying to change that. And I'm sort of still actively part of that campaign as such, in terms of doing things to try and change that. On the back of all that, anyway, I sort of navigated my own way. It's a weird thing, because it kind of creates, once she recovered, it kind of opened the door to all the pent up feelings that I'd probably had, which had just been kind of burying, really. And that wasn't like, you know, fortunately for me, it was never like I never needed to sort of take it to the extremes of needing medication or anything like that, which, you know, is quite common and quite normal and actually really helpful in a lot of cases, but I never needed that. But I did, yeah. I had counselling for it, and I still, you know, I see counselling, it was funny growing up, because counselling always felt like a dirty word to me growing up. It was like, if you, why would I need a counsellor? You know, counsellors are just for crazy people, right? But actually, as an adult, what I realise now is that, you know, we were talking about the gym and stuff earlier, and it's like, I go to the gym to stay fit so that physically my body can do what I need it to do. Why would I not do the same for my brain? Why would I not kind of look after my brain and kind of process all the emotions? And
I think, well, I'm a great fan of counselling. I had counselling for years, and I think everyone should have someone to talk to once a week that's just completely private. I think that'd be amazing. Yeah. I think the world would be a better place if everyone had.
Totally. And
and with exercise as well, like we were saying before we started recording, that's kept me sane during lockdown.
Yeah.
And I found exercise probably around the same time you did, probably about 5 years ago I started working out. But obviously I care about how I look, as most people do. But for me, it's the mental aspect completely. I'm so much happier.
Yeah, it's all the endorphins and everything that comes with it, right? Yeah. And how capable you feel, like when you're able to exercise, like you just feel like the day's so much more achievable.
Yep. Although, when I got back from my run earlier, I did a big run earlier, I couldn't open my front door. My hands just don't work. I swear to God, I was standing outside my front door. It is a bit tricky anyway. And then when I did manage to get in, I had to let the cat in through the back door, and he had to wait outside for quite a while because that's a smaller key. So I just couldn't. My hands just stopped working.
Just don't function.
So that's a bit of a concern. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Get one of those, what did they used to use? The little grabber things that you used to have when you were a kid, where you used to pick them up and opening the door with that.
I was thinking, have I got something like that? Obviously, I haven't. I was thinking, but anyway, whatever. So, so you had counselling, and that was great.
Yeah.
How long did you have it for?
I still have counselling, like periodically.
Oh, okay,
it kind of comes in and out. But I sort of, at that period, it was, you know, that probably went on for 3 or 4 months of going to see someone just to talk it through and kind of work it out, really, and make sense of it, because you've kind of, it's a trauma, really. I mean, like, whatever you know, largely it's trauma, and quite a lot of people go through those kind of traumas when they become parents, and you just sort of assume it's all this utopian dream of, like, I got lots from NCT. There were good things that came out of NCT, but one of the things that I didn't get from NCT was the reality of what it is to be a parent. I just didn't get that concept. And you know, I learned a lot, like, that prepared me, and that was great, but it was kind of, I didn't have that kind of awareness of kind of mental health or what things, you know, the whole concept of, like, oh, this is your birth plan kind of thing, and that's what you're going to have. Just make sure you're strong on that when you go into the hospital. And it's like, out of the 9 couples that sat our NCT, not one of them got their birth plan. And you told us get it.
No one gets their birth plan.
It's not a thing, is it?
It never goes. No.
It's not a thing. Oh, but yet you're kind of like, you're all buoyed up. You're like, right, you don't. Yeah. She won't be having any drugs. No, she's told me. I'm her advocate. This is how it's going to go. And they're like, I think you need to pipe down a bit, sunshine. She needs to be induced. And you're like, oh, no, we weren't okay with that. That's not what we were going to do. And it's not, you know, I'm not speaking badly of NCT. Like, I genuinely got a lot out of it. But it's like, there was some things that I think would have really been really beneficial to kind of include.
They should talk about postnatal depression.
Yeah.
They should talk
anxiety,
about it.
Anxiety, postnatal depression, psychosis. There's
maybe
so many things.
Warning signs.
Yeah.
You know.
It's just kind of, you know, it's all about normalising the conversation. And I, you know, so since then I've done some, on the back of all this, once we'd come out of it, I started working with a charity called Dads in Mind, who are part of a bigger charity called Bluebell, and they're all about paternal mental health and perinatal mental health. The charity's kind of 10 years old, and Dads in Mind is basically the male arm of it effectively, and it kind of supports partners through that with their mental health. And so I set that up in Baines, which is kind of covers Bath and northeast Somerset, and ran that for kind of nearly 2 years. And what I learned from that, it was a peer support service, you know, so I'm not clinically trained in any way. I'm not going in there with any kind of medical, I've got medical knowledge and as far as like from what I've learned, but it's not, I'm by no means a professional. But what I wanted to create, initially I wanted to create it myself through Kid and Bear. That was the plan. We were like, oh, well, we're going to change the shape of Kid and Bear and give it a charitable element, because we were donating to charity at that point, but we weren't necessarily kind of, we were like, actually, this is a missing piece of the puzzle. And then when this, when it came about that Dads in Mind were kind of already doing it and they were looking for somebody around here, I was like, okay, well, let's cut out all the admin. Let me just get on with the work. That's all I really care about.
Yeah.
So I was running support groups for dads, which was like, so we'd run them once a month where dads would come along for a couple of hours and we'd sit down in a comfortable space. We'd get pizzas in and just sit down and chew the fat over what people are going through. And I'd do one-to-ones as well. So that was, you know, like we'd go for a walk or take phone calls, and Zoom was less of a thing back then, but last year it was a much bigger thing. But what I realized doing that was that actually I don't need to be clinically trained to kind of empathize with what someone's going through and give them what I felt like I was missing, was that that ear to kind of hear what you've got going on, and somebody who kind of gets it. And one of the most powerful things that, excuse me, that I got through the dads groups was watching the most successful groups I ever ran were the ones where I really didn't say a lot. And that's not because I'm, you know, boring, although some would argue. But it's about them watching them do the work themselves, you know, like, you know, seeing them kind of run through it in a way where, and I remember one vividly where there was a guy who'd kind of come along. It was his very first session. He had a daughter who was 11 months old, and he'd kind of, the week or two before when he'd first called me, he was on the phone in tears saying, look, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can sort of talk about it, but I'm going to come because I want to change it. And but you have to bear with me if I get upset, kind of thing. And I was like, that's cool. Like, you know, there is no judgment here, mate. This is private. It's a safe space to kind of talk about what's going on. Anyway, he kind of got through kind of explaining what was going on for him. He didn't have a bond or connection with his daughter. He felt like he was very separate. The whole breastfeeding thing was causing him difficulties in terms of connecting with both his daughter and his wife. And he was like, it's been 11 months and I don't feel like it's ever going to change. And then a guy sat across the room from him, had a little boy who was two and a bit, and he said, if there's any consolation, I went through that for 2 years and I've just come out of it. And he said, and it's the most awesome thing now. Like, I get where you were because I sat there and watched it and I felt it. But for him, like, to sort of, I never saw him again. He was like, that's amazing. Like, thanks, dude. Like, and I do have still kept in touch with him, or I did until I left. But, you know, and the last year of sort of keeping in touch with him, he's in so much of a better place. And it's not to say that, you know, I'm not taking credit for that. It's about two guys who are kind of experiencing the same thing. And they're able to kind of know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that they, it's not as deep as it might feel in that moment, you know, and it will end.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Like, in terms of it changed, you know, selfishly, it was a really rewarding thing to do, because it was like just taking, what's the point in going through adversity, I suppose, if you can't use it for someone else's benefit in terms of sharing that and kind of building it. And so from that point of view, it was kind of using my own experience to kind of leverage that into encouraging it out of others and helping them kind of share. And you get guys that would come along and would kind of sit and not talk a lot, but afterwards you still saw that they got a lot out of it, because the listening was enough, you know. And it's different strokes for different folks, you know. It's like, whatever works for you. But, like, I don't think there was ever a dad who came along who didn't kind of leave going, actually, it doesn't feel as heavy now, you know. Or, like, you know, it's a bit better. So, I did that for, like, 2 years. And then when lockdown sort of kicked in last year, I was like, the thing that I realized was that I'm always in those situations, what I was always doing was dealing with a problem long after it could have been dealt with, or it, you know, that old sort of nip it in the buds. Well, if you had those warning signs, or if you had those kind of questions being asked earlier in the equation, would you get, well, I believe you would get a much shorter outcome. You know, you wouldn't get like a situation where you'd end up with somebody who's quite depressed and considering taking their own life, or, you know, like talking about leaving their wife because they just can't do it anymore. Or, you know, if we can catch that earlier, and that's largely education. So that was kind of last year, I was like, well, I want to get upstream and I want to change people's, you know, running to becoming a parent, because if we can do that, then they end up in a much better place. And hopefully something like Dads in Mind becomes not redundant, but it certainly it reduces the burden on it, and it also it kind of limits the amount of people that have to go down that road, you know.
So
that was kind of where Born Human came from, was trying to find those places where people can access that kind of information, and the workplace is exactly that. It is somewhere where you are, through pregnancy, you're still working, all through, you know, those people that struggling having children, they're going through kind of like IVF and miscarriages and all those kind of things, and you're at work through all of that kind of stuff. And actually it's a place where you keep it very private, you rarely talk about it at work. And if you could create an environment where actually it felt like that was an integral part of you being human, because ultimately that's what it is, you know, your work is exactly the same, then that's where we want to go with it, really. So
so what do you do, what do you offer then? Do you,
so we're the way we've chosen to work with it is that we try not to offer offer off the shelf products. So we're not kind of, I've spent enough years in a corporate to know that I've done training courses that are a good use of me trying to fall asleep for 8 hours, because I'm not really interested in the content, because it's like, it's just relevant. It's kind of like a tick box exercise.
Yes.
That is definitely not. We are not about tick box exercise. We are, the idea being that we work with organizations specifically to find out what their problem looks like first. So we'd go into an organization and sit down and say, what's your demographic? So let's look at your workforce. So you've got 40 employees, 20 of who are women, 20 of whom are men. Your average age is X. The amount of children that you're likely to have in the organization is Y. How many of them have got older parents? Because that's another consideration. Parenting is kind of like, we've all been parented. We may be parents now, but also this whole sandwich generation thing of like having to look after the elderly, because we're all living longer as well. You're still parenting. I mean, you know, Chris is a great example of that. Like someone that we both know who's kind of spent a long time looking after his own parents because they're older and struggling. But yeah, he hasn't got his own kids, so he's still going through the same struggles, but it's just in a different capacity. So it's kind of like we've chosen to be brave with it, in as far as saying, we're not going to give you something that on a website we'll be able to say, right, we'll deliver this, this and this. But what we do want to cover is kind of antenatal education. We want to offer kind of postnatal support and education in terms of supporting the workforce through the challenges they're facing. And that might be through peer support, it might be counselling, psychotherapy, whatever that might look like. But one of the other things that we're really keen to create is kind of these what we call micro networks, which are within work, that you kind of create that NCT at work. So you're, because everyone does that, right? You go to NCT and it's like, the most useful thing I got out of NCT was a WhatsApp group that I could text at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, and I'm not saying that you'd be necessarily texting your work colleagues at 3 o'clock in the morning, but there is an empathy that you're all kind of going on the same journey.
And so a
freedom to kind of speak freely, I suppose, about what you're going through. And the other thing I think that it could really, that we believe the benefit it could add, is that you've got, at the moment, there's a real divide between work and home life. They're treated as very separate things, and you know, you're expected to come to work and deliver at work and be productive, And yet at home, you're obviously expected to do the same. But the integration in the middle was kind of missing, really.
Yeah.
So what we're after, really, is finding employers that are really passionate about supporting their staff through their whole life journey, effectively, and recognizing the role that it plays. Because you're, you know, if they're not happy at home, they're not happy at work. So
yeah.
You're getting 50% at best, probably, of what somebody's actually capable of.
Yeah.
And so we want to create an environment where the workplace is somewhere you can feel free to be open and honest about what you're going through, I suppose. And it doesn't feel like a threat that you know, you'll be passed over for promotions or whatever if you tell them that you're struggling with anxiety.
Yes.
Or that's such a common thing. And it's a fear. Yeah. That lots of organisations have done some really great work with it. And there are some really good examples of businesses that I've seen that are on Channel 4 the other day, did a really great thing. I think it was yesterday or the day before. They gave everyone a day off. They just said, it's been a really tough year. We're shut for today. There are some people coming in to just man a station so that we can still put content out, and they'll be taking the day in lieu. But everyone else is down tools. I mean, like, that's a massive organisation to be saying, right, nobody comes to work today. And I guess lots of people are working from home, but still it's like, you know, the burden's gone. And I, you know, commend them for doing things like that. It's about saying we're more than just a product of how much money we make in the business that we offer, you know. So that's kind of where we want to go. And I've just started I think I mentioned to you before, but I'm just about to launch a podcast myself, which is about looking at journeys in parenthood and kind of what people are going through. So this will be reciprocated, Amy. I imagine you'll be coming on mine to talk about life as a single parent, I imagine.
I'd love to.
Oh, you have to now anyway, because you can't deny it. Your listeners would be devastated if you ignored me. But yeah, like, you know, to know that everybody's journey is kind of unique, and that there is but there are a lot of commonalities between people. And if you can see those and feel them in your own story, then it just makes it feel that bit less dominating, you know, in your life. So
yeah. And lonely.
Yeah.
Because everyone does go through the same things pretty much, you know. That was the good thing about going to baby groups.
Yeah.
Was we'd chat with all the mums, and everyone had the same stories, like with the feeding and the arguments with their partner and, you know, sleeping. You know, it's everyone's got the same, and it just makes you feel normal.
Yeah.
Because everyone else is going through it.
Yeah.
And of course there would be women who are obviously going through deeper issues, which I can't really remember if I ever had conversations. But then again, like I said, it's hard to know.
Yeah.
If you're feeling shitty, you just had a baby.
Yeah, that's but just what it is, right?
Shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember having, we're talking about the empathy thing and sort of knowing. I remember having a conversation with Mark, a mutual friend of ours, because they had their little boy was sleeping in their bed till he was like 3. And every time I saw him, he was like, dude, I'm so tired. Like, I just can't function. And I was like, well, Mark, just like, this is before I had kids, right? So, but I remember him sort of talking about it. He came around to see us one day at our house, and he said, oh, mate, I'm so tired. He just doesn't get any sleep. He sleeps horizontal in the bed. He keeps kicking me. And I was like, Mark, isn't it just a case that you do? I've watched it on the telly. And don't you just do like a week's sleep training? That's it, right? Just suck it up. I know it's hard for that week, but just get on with it. And I remember being really kind of like buoyant on it and kind of pushy on it almost. And he was like, oh, dude, no, it's just, you know, just leave it. It's fine. It's not. And I was like, come on, you know, back yourself. You'll get it done. Anyway, then like a year into having Wilbur, I phoned him specifically to apologise, to say, I owe you the biggest apology, because I'm driving out at 3 o'clock in the morning to get that kid to sleep, and I don't know what to do with myself. Yeah. Like, I'm not functioning. And you just don't know it until you're going through it, do you? But it's... that was, you know, I felt I needed to make that apology, because it's so easily done, isn't it? But yeah, it happens.
Juno still sleeps with me.
Yeah.
I woke up, took a photo actually last night. I walked upstairs. So she's 7. She's not that tall, but she was literally, she'd got so many teddy bears and like a blanket and a pillow and was laying like diagonally across the bed. I'm just like, for fuck's sake. Like, if you're going to, I don't mind if she sleeps in my bed, but it's like, don't bring all your toys in.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want your toys, sleep in your
own
bed.
Come into sleep, but yeah, yeah. They don't want that though, Amy, do they? What they want is you with them in their bed, basically. And if you're not going to do that, then I'll basically, if Muhammad won't come to the mountain, I'll bring the mountain to you. And that's kind of it, isn't it? But yeah.
It's, yeah, it's, but she won't sleep in my bed forever.
No, that's, I mean, that's it.
And I sleep, so it's not a problem. If I didn't sleep, it'd be a problem.
Yeah.
But we both sleep and I'm like, whatever.
We've got, I mean, like, so we ended up getting a sleep trainer in for Wilbur because at like 18 months, like I say, we were driving out at like 3 o'clock in the morning for like an hour at a time, trying to get him off, then bringing him in. And it went on for like way too long. And in the end, someone said, you need to get some help. And we had a lady, she's magical as far as I'm concerned. She came in for a week or five nights. She stayed with us in the spare room. And for the first three nights, she does the night. So at the very least, you're paying her for three nights full sleep because she does all the work, which I still thought was good value.
What do they do? Do you know what they do? Is it a secret?
Yeah, no, that's not a secret.
Like Nanny McPhee.
Do you know, it's the most annoying thing because on the first night she said, right, so what I'll do is I'll come round, you put him to bed as normal. But at that point, he wouldn't go in a sleeping bag. Like literally, it was like the world was ending if you put him in a sleeping bag.
How old was he? 18 months?
He was 18 months, yeah. The world was in if you put him in a sleeping bag. He wouldn't sleep without a dummy, and he wasn't interested in like a comfort or a teddy or anything like that, right? So he would go to sleep, but like it was just like it was hellish kind of thing. You know, it could take us an hour, 2 hours sometimes to get him off. Anyway, so she said, what I want you to do is to put him in the sleeping bag. He doesn't have a dummy. And you put him down and just let him cry. And when he cries, I'll be here. So then I'll take over. And I was like, okay, like, good luck. You'll enjoy this, love. And and then within like, so she was sort of outside the bedroom. We came downstairs. We were sitting on the sofa listening. And all she did was open the door and she went, shh, shh. And just shut the door again. And I was like, hang on a minute. Why is he lying down? Is he stopped? Is he not doing anything? And then he just went to sleep. And I was like, that is ridiculous. That is not a thing. Like how I have tried that. Like I've watched that on YouTube and that did not work. So why is it any different? Anyway, so she did this thing and that wasn't the end of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because he'd wake up in the night and that was always a thing. But it was the same thing. She sort of gradually eased him off the connection, I suppose, and the connectivity of being with someone. And he kind of, you just go in, lay him down, and this whole sort of shush, you know, even when she was teaching us how to do that, she was like, right, practice your shush. And I was like, practice my shush. Like, I know how to shush. I'm nearly 40 years old. I know how to shush. And she was like, no, no, show me. So I was like, okay, yeah. Shh, shh. And she was like, from the belly. I was like, all right, okay. Let me give it another go. She was like, stronger, harder, firmer, faster. And I was like, really? Anyway, it did work. And it was different. And I don't know what it was, but it did work. And she does like three nights. And then after the three nights are up, then you take over and she kind of just watches you and guides you. And she sort of just observes from the outside. And there's this whole process that she's kind of like, okay, so you go and lie him down now. Turn to shush and go leave the room. But he's good as gold now. Like, I mean, she fixed him.
Wow.
Like, I think it was like we paid like 800 quid and it was like the best £800 I've ever spent. Like, it's amazing. But the irony is that now we're number two, she's like 19 months and she's getting some bad habits now as well. So we're like, she was a really good sleeper as a baby. And now we're like, you know, she wakes up at like 4, 5 o'clock, which isn't that bad, I suppose. But then we've taken.
But what does she want
to
do? Does she want to come in with you?
Currently, what she wants to do is forge holes in my face, like with her finger, like as deep as she possibly can. Like she's obsessed with kind of my mouth and my nose and my ears and just like it's pods and pokes. I took her to the garden centre the other day, right, to get a Mother's Day. We got Lucy a plant for Mother's Day. And I was like, well, you guys choose it. Well, Wilbur will choose it because he's five and she's definitely not capable of that. had her on my shoulders. She took both her hands and wedged them into the inside of my cheeks and just yanked them backwards. And I felt like I had a Chelsea smile or something. I was like, that is so painful. Like, you're like 19 months old. How do you cause that much pain?
Oh my God.
But she, I mean, she's great. She's just a little pocket rocket. She's full of love and energy and she's full of smiles. But she's, you know, so we're kind of like, I'm like you, I sleep. Like I say, even if they wake up, I can go back to sleep pretty quickly. Sadly for Lucy, that's not the same. She doesn't really sleep as well. So we're just sort of like at that sort of clinch point at the moment of like, we should do some sleep training, but we don't really want to face the pain. So maybe we could just ride it out.
It's hard.
Yeah.
And that is quite early. I mean, I suppose if it was more 6 o'clock, then my mate's kid wakes up at 5, 6 o'clock every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and that, then he's just awake.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, she always, the sleep trainer always said anything before six is like a no-go. So whatever they're doing, unacceptable before six. Seven, ideally. And then it's like, you know, between six and seven, you just play it by ear a little bit. But
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, like you say, like you make it work, don't you? It's like, and everyone is unique to each of us because the kids are all unique as well, right? You can't. Yeah, you can't apply.
Yep.
You can apply the same principles because it obviously works. Like, she wouldn't have come around here with a plan and then gone and changed it. So,
yeah.
The difficulty is, I think we swore this time that if we had a problem, we'd get her in super early. So, be like, because she's cheaper as well. So, the earlier you get her in, the less hassle she has. So, she's like, I won't be there as long, so I won't charge you as much. So, I was like, right. If she's causing us a problem at 3 months, bang her in then. She can just come and sort it out. But obviously with coronavirus, then she's not able to kind of come and do what she would normally do.
Yeah, of course.
We did have a garden meeting with her at one point about 9 months ago, sat outside until like 10 o'clock at night talking about what we do. But So, yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that. Because she's not going to be like it forever, but it's just how long you can
stomach it. But I kind of work on a basis. If she sleeps through till like five, I can live with that. Like, and I can probably get her to sleep till seven if I'm in bed with her. Then that's just like 2 hours, and eventually she'll kind of work it out. But it's the price of being a parent, I think, to some extent, isn't it?
You get it. You always get it at some point.
Yeah.
My kids. They don't get up early. I've been very, very lucky. They've always slept.
Yeah.
But I think if they had done, then it's just when they're teenagers.
Yeah.
Hoovering.
Exactly.
7 o'clock in the morning. Or banging on the door really loudly to get them out. You'll get them back.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. It comes one way or another.
Somewhere along the line. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so they're all good, and it's as I say, it's the cost of it, isn't it? It's just what it is, but. Yes, they make us very happy in many other ways, don't they? So that's
they do. That's something. And that's not the worst. You know, it could be worse.
Oh, totally.
Because you always think it could be worse.
Could be worse. Worst things happen at sea, or whatever they say. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.
It sounds wonderful what you do. I'll post all the links.
Thank you very
much.
So
what's the next plan? You're just building it up at the moment.
Yeah, so we're just sort of actively trying to get out and talk to businesses about what we're doing. I'm doing some sort of presentations and seminars, which will be kind of volunteering to businesses to kind of raise awareness for what we're doing and kind of explore what we can do. So I'm kind of working on, it's interesting where it goes, because lots of things are coming up that I never anticipated, which is really lovely. And it proves the point that it has so many different applications. It's just trying to, As everything with a new business, it's trying to stay true to exactly what you want and not just getting overly excited about, that sounds really cool and that I'd love to be a part of that. But it's like, well, that's not what my focus should be right now. But because I'm passionate about the cause and I'm passionate about changing outcomes, then it's like, if something could change outcomes, then I'm interested, you know. But ultimately we're sort of just trying to get out and sort of get our name out there, work with businesses and sort of see how it evolves. But I'm quite excited.
Well, I think it's wonderful and I think it's really important what you're doing. So
thank you, Amy.
Well, that's done you.
Very kind. Yeah. And thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Absolutely.
Thank you for coming. I've really enjoyed it. And get do your podcast.
I will. Yeah, yeah. You're on. Don't, the trailer's up already. The trailer's up. So that's it. You're lined up now. That's done. We'll book it in. I'll get it in, and we'll we'll have it.
You just got to start doing it.
That's right.
Just start doing it.
Well, that's right. It's,
that's it.
As I say, I've been procrastinating over how it should look, but I think now it's found its feet. It'll be feels like it's got purpose now. So that's all I wanted. So yeah.
Good.
We'll be doing this conversation again in a different form soon, Amy. Yes. Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm so excited. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, you too.
All right. Take care.
Cheers, you too. Bye. Bye.
Oh, love Andy. Isn't he a nice bloke? And he's doing such good things in the world. I'm going to share everything if you want to get in touch with him. If you want to get in touch with me, Mum and Mama Pod on all the socials, mumandmamapod@gmail.com as well. If you've got anything you'd like to share with me, I'd love to have you on. I love talking to people, as you well may have gathered. I've got loads of good episodes coming up. I'm very excited to share them with you. But we've also got loads of good episodes in the past as well. If this is your first time listening, check out some of the other episodes. We've had some amazing people on. Child psychologist Joanna Fortune's been on a few times. She's really good. Got the nicest voice in the world. Had Kelly LaRock on. We've had loads of people on. It's amazing. Amazing. But yeah, get in touch if there's anyone you'd like to hear that I've not had on already. Have a lovely Sunday. Subscribe to the podcast, please. And share. Sharing's caring. All right, big love. See you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.